All right. Well, good evening, everyone, and welcome, Toby, of course. And to everyone who's with us on the screen, we are back to our regular program. And we find ourselves on Yud Tesamah Beis on 19b. Actually, just a little bit before we're actually before the Mishnah on that page. And by the way, if you have a standard Gemara, all you have to do is turn one more page or a few pages in the art scroll, and you'll see we are very close to finishing the Perek. God willing, in 1, 2, 3 weeks from now, we'll finish the second Perek. You know, that's kind of quick. I feel like we're now running through everything. Look at that. So once you can make it over the first Perek, it essentially becomes smooth sailing, at least in that regard. So we find ourselves about 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 lines down from the top of the page on 19b on Yud Tesamah Beis. And basically the Gemara does what it does. As we've seen many times, we will bring in a statement from a rabbi that pertains to our discussion. And once we bring that rabbi in, we say, you know what? He also had other good ideas to share. So we go on a little bit of a tangent. So here are a few other teachings. The Amar Achia Bar Abba Amar Rav Yochanan. The Achia Bar Abba said the name of Rav Yochanan. Shur HaTefer HaLochel Moshe MiSinai. So, okay, when you look at a Sefer Torah, of course, we talked about how it has to be stitched. We talked about what it has to be stitched of. But if you notice, it's funny, I once saw this on a Torah where it went really far down. I thought there was something wrong with the Torah. I didn't realize it was the halacha, you know, those many times ago. So they'll actually leave a significant amount of space on the top and on the bottom that's not stitched. You don't stitch all the way to the top and all the way to the bottom. Why? So Rashi explains for us. He says that what's going to happen is that you're going to be, let's say, lifting the Torah, rolling the Torah, so, and you're going to keep pulling it, and you're going to think, oh, it's really taut, you know, it's solid, it's stable. And then what's going to happen is, God forbid, you're going to actually tear the scroll in half. However, if it's not sewn all the way at the top, it's a little bit more flexible. And you can see once the pages begin to be separating from each other, you're like, oh, I shouldn't be pulling that hard on it.
Like a slit in a skirt.
Oh, well, I...
Yeah, because if it's just like sewn all the way to the bottom, you can't move your legs as much as if there's a little bit of a give.
Very good. So we get some like Chachmas Nashim in here to understand this. You guys heard Toby?
No.
No. Oh, I need to let me move the microphone a little bit. I don't know if you want to
power again. Yeah, I just said it was a little bit like the idea of a slit in a skirt, where if you have a little bit of a slit, then there's more ease in movement. It sounds a little bit like that.
See, this is why it's important for both men and women to learn Gemara, so that way we get all the haros. Okay, Shkayach. Yeah, you guys heard this time, right? Okay, good. So the microphone's working. So what happened? Machlola Amocha, he hit it on the head of Lo Amru El Kadesh Lo Yikarea. So originally he said it was a halacha Moshe MiSinai. He doesn't change the rule. He just says that instead of this being a tradition that we have all the way back from Mount Sinai, it's something that the Rabbanan, that the rabbis instituted later. But it's not actually, it doesn't carry as much weight, but of course. We are rabbinic Jews. We practice rabbinic Judaism. If the rabbis say to do something, we follow it nonetheless. That's a little susur. Moving on. So Moshe Rabbeinu, if you remember, he goes in and then he's protected by the rocks as God's presence comes by. There's a similar episode with Eliyahu Hanavi, with Elijah as well. And what's teaching us is that God's glory is so great that had there been even the smallest little pinprick of light that could come through from God, then Moshe and Eliyahu would have been obliterated in that moment. How do we notice? Shenemar, Hilo Yirani Ha'odam V'chai, it says pretty explicitly in the Pasuk that no man can see God and live. What's it mean when it says that all these words are upon the, referring to the stone tablets with the Ten Commandments? Torah, it means that God didn't just teach Moshe basic stuff at Har Sinai, but he taught him the Dikduke Torah, the details, the inferences that we can make from the Torah, as well as Dikduke Sofrim. Rashi explains, what's Dikduke Torah? Ribuyin Esen Vigamen Mi'utin Achin Verakin. That anytime it says the word S in the Torah or the word Gam, it's, you know, many times we don't know how to translate the word S, Aleph Suf, but actually, you know, you could actually darshan those. And then there's Achin Verak, and anytime it says Ach, we have Ach, it comes up for, you know, in terms of Yom Tov, Ach Sameach, as well as whenever it says Rak, only in the Torah. These small little details that you think might just be filler words, they have things, they have messages to convey. And God conveyed all that to Moshe Rabbeinu. Let's move this a little bit closer so to make sure everyone hears. The Dikduke Sofrim, as well as the Sofrim, what the rabbis will come up with later. Rashi says, Shetikdiku achrom miloshon mishnah sarishonim. Masha Sofrim asin lechadesh, and that which they will innovate later on, the mitzvah midrabanan, umaynihu, and what's a prime example of a mitzvah midrabanan, a rabbinical mitzvah that they'll introduce later on? Mikra Megillah. So you think Megillah was made, and this is a, there's a classic Beis Halevi that comes up during Pesach, which he says, many people think that the reason we eat matzah, the reason we have to bring a carbon Pesach is because Hashem took us out of Egypt, so we have to commemorate the story of the exodus of Egypt. But very radical thing he says is, no, actually, these mitzvos are inherently valuable, and God created the story of the exodus of Egypt and made it happen so that there be relevance for and meaning behind the mitzvahs for us to be able to grasp. So a similar idea over here, you know, Mikra Megillah is already something important on its own terms, but God had to orchestrate that the story would happen at some point. By the way, it's possible I didn't do enough research. I think our Thursday morning folks, you might enjoy this one because we learned a while back, and I think in general we might be familiar with this story, that Moshe Rabbeinu went to the classroom of Rabbi Akiva, and when he got to the classroom of Rabbi Akiva, he's like, I don't understand what's flying over here. And then it's explained to Moshe that you were taught the general principles at Har Sinai, but years and years later, they took those principles and they mined it and they developed it later on. So you'd have to square that Gemara with this Gemara over here. This Gemara over here seems to be telling us that Moshe knew everything. He knew about Mikra Megillah. He knew all the details that were going to come up in the future. So how do I square this Gemara with the Gemara with Rabbi Akiva, which seems to indicate that Moshe Rabbeinu did not know about all these extra details that would be developed later on? I don't have a good answer. It could be maybe they are actually having a machlokas. I didn't look a lot into it, but I'm not aware of anyone immediately addressing it. Is what it is. We now reach the Mishnah. Any questions before we go on to the Mishnah? Okay. So we actually start off with the easier stuff. I'm not going to sugarcoat this. This Gemara, actually, the concepts in here are not complicated. It's just that it's a little bit of what I like to call a ping pong match. The Gemara, there's a lot of shaka vitaria, a lot of back and forth, a lot of give and take in the Gemara, but here's kind of what we need to know. Take a look at the Mishnah. The Mishnah asks the following question. Well, Hakol Kshirim Likrosas Megillah Chutz Mechir Shel Vekatan. Who's allowed to read the Megillah? So in general, we talked about even in the past women reading Megillah, right? We learned that toward the beginning of the Masechta. Maybe even women can read Megillah. And the Mishnah tells us anyone can read the Megillah with the exception of a Cheresh Shot Vekatan. So a Cheresh in this context usually refers to a deaf mute. Here refers to someone, well, he has to be able to speak. Otherwise, he for sure can't be motzi others in listening and hearing and reading the Megillah. But he's not able to hear that which he says. But he knows how to actually lay in the Megillah. Maybe he learned to lay in the Megillah before he lost his hearing. What's a cheresh? So that's a cheresh. A shota, and by the way, just if you need to scribble down these terms, because this term is going to come up throughout the entire sugya. So cheresh again is someone who is able to speak but is deaf. So just someone who's deaf. A shota is someone who, I'm trying to think what's the most politically correct way of saying this. someone who lacks mental capacity. Vikanta, nakanta refers to a child under 13 or a girl under 12. So those three categories cannot lay Megillah. They are not Yotzei the mitzvah, and certainly they cannot be Motzi others in the mitzvah. However, Rabbi Yehuda argues, or Yehuda Mash Berkhan, Yehuda says, but the one exception to the rule, I agree, but when it comes to a child can actually lay Megillah for other people. So the Gemara is going to mostly concern itself with the status of a Cheresh, but we will talk also about Katan in Tosos especially. So that's the basic breakdown of the Mishnah. Any questions on definitions? Because these definitions need to be clear. The whole Gemara is based on it.
So on the deranged, I mean, the Shota is defined by Art Scroll as a deranged person.
Yeah.
But when I think of the word Shota, I think of just somebody who's very like low intelligence. So those are two very different things.
Yeah. So, I mean, this is like, you know, a subject I think of like contemporary debate about drawing the line of who's considered Shota, who's not. It becomes very complicated. You know, if you say someone's below a certain level of IQ, does that mean they become a Shota? Where do you draw the line at? And think about today also. You know, today, you know, or like, let's say back then, right? Someone who's a deaf mute, we would say is essentially like a Shota because they can't pick up language and they can't convey language. They were basic. That's why they're put in the same category as a Shota. However, nowadays, you know, we had Helen Keller and we had like all these kind of therapies that were developed. So someone might not be able to hear and to speak, but they could still have, with proper training, they'll have the same level of insight and intelligence as someone who can't speak and hear.
The footnote here says for a definition of the Sicha Giga.
Okay, so we'll have to take a look at Maseches Chagiga and see the breakdown of that. But that's a good question. Where do we draw the line on a Shota? Okay. Okay, going on to the Gemara. So the Gemara is basically, the Gemara is going to concern itself this evening with determining who is the Tana Kama. So we know that Rabbi Yehuda argues on the Tana Kama. However, we'll see that it's possible the Tana Kama is the first guy in the mission, the anonymous person. So we don't know who that is. So Matana Cheresh Diyevan Nami Lo. So when you just read the first part of the Mishnah, it implies that even B'diyeved, a Cheresh Shota V'Katan, even if you do decide to listen to them, it's not like we say, you know what, you put in a nice effort, you'll be Yotzi the mitzvah anyway. Doesn't work like that. It'd be just as bad as if a non-Jew decided to lean in for you. You're not going to be Yotzi the mitzvah from them. Even B'diyeved. So who is that? Amar Rav Masna, Rabbi Yossi. He must be Rabbi Yossi. How do we know? What's the position of Rabbi Yossi? Let's say someone lanes Shema and does not hear it. He doesn't say Shema out loud enough for his ears to pick up on what he's saying. I mean, you say Shema. So you have to say Shema Yisrael loud enough that you can actually hear what you're saying. Right, Yossi Omer Lo Yatzer. Yossi says, if you cannot hear what you're saying, you have not been Yotzei the mitzvah. So, quick background. We're going to see basically there are three potential positions. The main issue of a Cheresh is that he cannot hear that which he's laning. He is laning flawlessly, no mistakes. It's immaculate. But in the end of the day, if he's deaf, by definition, he can't hear that which he's saying. So there are three different potential approaches. One approach is the extreme to say, if you can't hear that what you're saying, you are not Yotzei, even B'diyeved. The other extreme is to say, it doesn't matter. As long as you say something, even if you don't say it loud enough for you to hear it, even L'charchila, you can do it. And of course, the middle approach will be, L'charchila, you should hear that which you're saying. Anytime you need to make a bracha, anytime you need to lane something, you need to say something for a mitzvah, L'charchila, ideally you should hear it. But if you say it low enough, you still say it, it's just not loud enough for you to hear that what you're saying, B'diyeved, ex post facto, that's okay. Those are the three positions. So our Mishnah, the Tana Kama, seems to take the most stringent position, which is if you're a Cheresh, if you cannot hear that which you're laning, you cannot be Motzi anyone, period, even B'diyeved. That seems to be the position Rabbi Yossi here, who says that if I'm obligated to say Shema once in the morning, once in the evening, I'm going to have to repeat Shema later because I daven Marv before three stars came out, before Tzei Sako Chavim, which is around nowish. So if I say Shema, not loud enough, for me to actually hear it. Korn Rav Yossi, I have not fulfilled the mitzvah of Kriya Shema. Huh. Well, the same Rav Yossi who says that if you cannot hear Shema, you're not Yotze, is probably the Tana Kama of our Mishnah, who says, for this very same reason, a Cheresh, because he definitionally cannot hear that which he's saying, he can't be Yotze Megillah, nor, and certainly he can't be Motzi others by laning Megillah. That sound good? Yeah.
Well, yeah, totally. Except the difference between the two is, I mean, a person doesn't have to read the Megillah themselves. They can be Yotze by listening. Mm-hmm. But with Shema, if I don't say it, then I'm not, I haven't fulfilled my obligation. The fact that I'm, other people around me are saying it, they can't fulfill my obligation to say Shema.
Wait, so let me get this straight. Maybe this is what you're asking. Are you asking, maybe the Cheresh, he can't hear it himself, but if he lanes flawlessly and I hear him laning, why can't I be Yotze from him? Is that what you're asking?
I'm just saying that they're fundamentally different mitzvahs.
Megillah and Shema?
Right, because Megillah is something that I can fulfill my obligation by listening to somebody else read it. But with Shema, if I hear you say Shema, that doesn't fulfill my obligation.
I'm fairly certain that if one person is obligated in Shema and you listen, you can fulfill it as well. That's the principle of Shema Ka'ona. Think about in Parsha Zachor. We come in, we hear the guy laying Parsha Zachar for us.
But that's not the same as Shema.
So I think for Shema, I mean, I have to check, but my impression is the same principle would apply of Shema Ka'ona, that if someone who has an equal level obligation, equal or greater level obligation, reads the Shema and I listen, it's a good question. I don't see why it wouldn't apply. But the basic principle, the important principle to take away from here is, if I have to lane something and I can't hear it, it's not considered like I said it. It doesn't count. That's Visitor Rav Yossi. Okay, so that's Rav Masna. Rav Masna says that the Tana Kama of Visitor Rav Yossi, who absolutely rejects, if you can't hear that which you say, you have not said it. Umimai Rav Yossi, he, Udiyavi Nami Lo. Who is to say the Tana of our Mishnah is Rav Yossi? Dilma Rav Yehuda, he. Maybe Rav Yehuda is the Tana of our Mishnah. Now you're going to say, wait a minute, but isn't he like the second guy in the Mishnah? The Gemara is going to ask that question. L'chachila hudalo. Maybe the Tana of our Mishnah is Rabbi Yehuda. And he says, l'chachila, you're not, the Cheresh isn't Yotze. But ha'diyavid shaper dummy. However, b'diyavid, it's okay. Maybe the Tana Kama of our Mishnah is Rabbi Yehuda. He takes the middle road approach, which says, a Cheresh cannot be motzi others in Megillah. But if he does do it and you listen to him, b'diavad, you'll be Yotze nonetheless. We had a similar discussion about women leading Megillah, and we said, you know, maybe there's reasons not to do it, but post facto, if you did hear women leading the Megillah, maybe that still counts. So the question is, maybe Rabbi Yehuda's the Tana of the Mishnah. Lo sagadai that the Tana Yehirshu the Shota, the Katan, Ma Shota, the Katan, Dieven Namilo, Av Chirsh, Dieven Namilo. However, that doesn't make sense because Chirsh, Shota, the Katan are put in the same basket. So I know that a Katan, I know a young kid, and I know that a Shota, even Bidieven, cannot be Motzi people in Megillah. So how can we say that the Tana of our mission is Rabbi Yehuda, who says that a Cheresh could be Motzi someone, b'diavad, he's only Pasul Lichad Chila, he's not allowed to be Motzi people. But his two fellow co-categorists, the other two folks in the category there, even b'diavad can't be Motzi people. So the Gemara says, the Gemara just shrugs it off. The Dilma hug the Isa, the hug the Isa. You know what? We have to look at each and every category on its own. We have to look at Cheresh on its own merits, Katan on its own merits, and Shota on its own merits. So maybe a Katan and a Shota cannot be Motzi anyone at all, even post facto. But maybe a Cheresh post facto would be Motzi somebody. But now getting to like the stronger question or the more obvious question on this, how could Rabbi Yehuda be the Tana of our Mishnah? Mediktani Sefer Yehuda Mashir B'Katan Mechad the Reish Lav Yehudahi. Did you know who argues on the Tana Kama of our Mishnah? It's Rabbi Yehuda. So how could Rabbi Yehuda be both? How could he be the Tana of our Mishnah and then argue on himself at the end of the Mishnah, right? That'd be a steer being a bay. The Gemara kind of repeats itself. Some gersos take this out. V'dilma kura yehudiki mi di rachel posto save lakshir. Okay, we can ignore that. V'dilma kura yehudiki. You know what? I can save this question. Maybe Rabbi Yehuda is the Tana of the Mishnah for the Reisha, the beginning, and the Seifa. The Trey Gavni Katan Katanila. And when he says that a Katan cannot read the Megillah, and then he corrects himself and says a Katan can read the Megillah, he's actually not contradicting himself because he's talking about two different kinds of children. And it's going to be very relevant for our upcoming Shira on children in Shul. Because Suri Mechser Bahaki Katani. By the way, I don't know if I've ever stopped to emphasize. This is an important phrase just for Talmudic phraseology that you might want to jot down if you're doing that. Chesuri Mechser Bahaki Katani. That means there are words missing from our Mishnah, and this is how you read it. It doesn't necessarily mean that there are words that are literally missing from the Mishnah, but it means that we have to kind of read a little bit between the lines in the Mishnah. So how would I read the Mishnah in between the lines? This is an alternative reading of the Mishnah by adding in some extra words that conveniently make everything work for us. Hakol Sheir and Likros is a Megillah. Everyone is allowed to read the Megillah. Everyone's valid, legitimate to read the Megillah. Chutz Mecher Shot V'Katan. Okay, nothing new yet, except for Cher Shot V'Katan. Bamed Var Mamurim. When do we say that a Cher Shot V'Katan cannot be motzi other people? V'Katan Shlo Higilechina. For a child who has not yet reached the stage of education, Rashi says it's about 9 or 10 years old. There's a debate about where you draw the line. But a kid who is a few years before bar mitzvah, he's already at the age where he's supposed to be mechanic, and you're supposed to educate him and teach him the mitzvos and keeping halacha properly. So actually, the Tana of our Mishnah in the beginning and the end, maybe it's Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda, when he says a katan cannot read, he's talking about a very young child. And when he says a katan is allowed to read, it's referring to a katan who, he's not bar mitzvah yet, but he's like 9, 10 years old, who's certainly within the age of chinuch and has that level of intelligence and mitzvah responsibility that he could be motzi others as well. So basically, this is all to get to the point that we have a question. Maybe Rabbi Yossi is not the Tana of our Mishnah. Maybe Rabbi Yehuda is the Tana of our Mishnah. And he says, Echeresh b'dieved could be motzi other people. Unlike Rabbi Yossi would say that Echeresh even b'dieved cannot be motzi others. Basically, the Gemara keeps counting Rav Masa's assumption that Rav Yossi is the Tana of our Mishnah. But my kimta Rabbi Yehuda d'yevet, why are we assuming that Rabbi Yehuda takes the moderate, the middle row position, and says that a Chayresh should not be, he should not be the laner in shul for Megillah, but if you heard Megillah from him, b'dyevet, it's okay. Maybe Elohad the Tani, right, this is a different Yehuda, I believe, Bereid Rav Shimon ben Pazi, Chayresh HaMedam Rabbeinu Shomea. If you have a Chayrish who can speak but cannot hear, our case, Torein L'Charchila, when he separates Truma, he can separate Truma L'Charchila, and he can recite the Bracha. There's a Bracha, L'Hafrish Truma. That's something, you know, we're making here every day, right? But money. So the key word over here is L'Charchila. The Chayrish L'Charchila is able to say something. Even though he can't hear it, he can say that Bracha. So money, Rabbi Yehuda, Devin in the Chachil Lo, Rabbi Yossi, Devin Nami Lo. So this doesn't align with Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Yossi says, Acheresh, forget about it. Even B'di-Yavid, he can't work. And Rabbi Yehuda says, B'di-Yavid is fine, but the Chachil Acheresh shouldn't be doing anything, saying anything for a mitzvah that he can't hear himself. But here it's saying a third position, the most lenient one, that even the Chachil Acheresh can recite a bracha even though he can't hear it. So it doesn't fit with Rabbi Yehuda or Rabbi Yossi. And those are the only two shittas we're aware of. Must be the Lamai, Rabbi Yehuda, Vapila Chachila. It must be Rabbi Yehuda, and we misunderstood Rabbi Yehuda's position. Rabbi Yehuda says that a Cheresh Kilein, even Lechachila. And so what's the point of all this? Let me just zoom out for a second. The point is that Rabbi Yehuda cannot be the Tana of our Mishnah. Because the Tana of our Mishnah, at very least, has to say that at least lechatchila, a cheresh should not be leaning, because the Mishnah says anyone could read the Megillah except for a cheresh shot v'katan. Very clearly, the Mishnah does not want a cheresh to be the Baal Korei. The question is it a preference or is it an absolute rule? So if the Mishnah is the position of Rav Yossi, then it's an absolute rule. If the Tana of our Mishnah is Rav Yehuda, then it would have to be that only Bidi'evet Acherish can lain for others. But the issue is, we just saw over here that Rabbi Yehuda seems to hold that even Lechachila he'd be okay with a Cheresh laning, which means he can't be the Tana of the Mishnah, which means the only guy we're left with is Rabbi Yossi, which proves Rav Masa's point that Rabbi Yossi is the Tana of our Mishnah. I know this is quite, I told you this is quite it. This is quite something. I warned this. There'll be something fun at the end. Don't worry. I planned a more like conceptually fun thing to do. So here's another brisa. This brisa says a person should not say, you know, benching. We shouldn't say birchas hamazon belibo in your heart. Ritva and others point out this doesn't mean literally you thinking it. Certainly, if all you do is think birchas hamazon, but you don't actually move your mouth, you don't say anything, then you're not yotze. What it means is you're saying it under your breath. Then beirach yotza. And if you make the bracha, you are yotze. So again, so now it sounds like there's a shita out there, or we're ping-ponging back and forth. There's a ton out there who actually adopts the middle position, that ideally you should hear what you're saying when you say berachas hamazon. But if you said it under your breath really quickly, you know, you're ever like, I don't know, you're like a public setting and you just finish eating bread and like you don't want people to think like you're talking to yourself out loud. So you just like quickly like, you know, like under there, or you take your phone out and you pretend you're talking to someone. So let's say you don't really hear what you're saying because of that. So then b'di'evit your yod say, b'lechachila, no. So money, who's the Tana? Lo Rav Yehuda, v'lo Rav Yossi. Yirai Yehuda, fi lechachili, Rav Yossi, fi yedivet nami, though. Because where we stand in the shock of entire the Gemara is, I can only conceive of two extremes. There's either Rav Yossi, who says, if you don't hear yourself saying the words, you're not Yotze. And you have Rav Yehuda, who says, you don't have to hear it, even lechachila, it's okay. So who holds the middle position that b'di'evit your yod say, b'lechachila, you shouldn't do that? So the final answer of the Gemara, well, we're going to have final two answers. La'olam Rabbi Yehuda va'afi lechachila. So we maintain Rabbi Yehuda still holds that even lechachila, you don't have to hear that which you're saying. So he cannot be the Tana of our Mishnah. It's still Rabbi Yossi. Lo'kasha, hadi de hadarabe. This comes up a lot in the Gemara. Also, when there's different ways of resolving a self-contradiction. One way to resolve a self-contradiction, what a rabbi says, is to say that sometimes he is propounding his own position. Other times he's just conveying the position of his teacher, of his Rebbe. So that's what's happening over here. Titania is our final brisa of the evening. Rehudo Mer Mishmar Lazar ben Azariah. So his Rebbe was Rav Elazar ben Azariah. Hakoria Shema, someone who's Shema. We got the Shema. Hakoria Shema, Tsar Sheyashmiela Uzno. You need to hear. This has come up a number of times already in Megillah. You have to hear that which you're saying when you recite Shema. Shenemar Shema Yisrael Hashem Lakin Hashem Echad Hashmeila Asnacha Masha Tamotz Mipicha. It says Shema, listen. Meaning, when you say Shema, you have to actually listen and hear that which you're saying. Parenthetical. We give the other opinion. Rami Omer Asher Anok Mitzav Chayom Avavecha Acher Kavanas Aleiv Hein Hein Adavarim. Okay, you give me Yotze in your heart. Very beautiful. But the point over here is when. It's not Rabbi Yehuda who holds that b'di'evet you could be yotze. It's actually his Rebbe who holds that. Rabbi Yehuda takes an even more expansive position. He says even lechachila you don't have to hear that what you're saying. What does that all mean? Okay, so I brought this. I don't know if you have chart. Does the art school give you a chart? This is why I got to show off my handy Masifta come over here. It creates a beautiful chart which summarizes everything, and I'll tell it to you. So. This is the maskana. This is the summary over here. According to this stage in the Gemara, this is all answer number one. Answer number two is like two, three lines. It goes very quickly. There's our Mishnah and then four brises, four other Taniyitic halachos that we learned. And we want to figure out who holds what. So in our Mishnah, a cheresh is pasul afilu b'di'evet. The cheresh cannot be motzi anyone at all, even b'di'evet. And that's the position of Rabbi Yossi, not Rabbi Yehuda. And then we had the case in the Gemara which said Hakore Shema Avlo Hishmi La Azno Yatsa. So when it says that Rabbi Yehuda holds that you can be Yotze Shema even if you don't hear it, Rabbi Yehuda, in this understanding, the Gemara says, even Lechatchila, you don't have to hear Shema. And then, Kidas Mishra Yabaisi Shachir Shema Davri Yishra Yatron Lechatchila. So who is the position? And then again, it's Rabbi Yehuda who also says that a Cheresh Lechatchila is able to make a bracha on Shruma. And then finally, the last brisa we saw, which says that if you say Birchas Hamazon and you don't hear, you only Yotzei B'diavet, it can't be Rabbi Yehuda, because Rabbi Yehuda says, even Lechachila, you don't have to hear that, what you say. That's the position of his Rebbe, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. So what we have from this stage in Gemara is, again, there's three shitos. Rav Yossi, this is the takeaway. Rav Yossi says, if you can't hear that, what you're saying, you are not Yotzei at all. Hence, a Cheresh cannot be Motzi anyone at all. On the other extreme, you have Rabbi Yehuda who says, even Lechachila, we love our you know, all the Cheirishes, they could all lane, it's fine. And then the middle position is Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, who says that Lechachila, you should hear that what you're saying, B'diyevet, it's okay. Final few lines. Hasha to Aslahachi, now that we've gotten to this point, Afiyatim Rabbi Yehuda ki Rabbi Sfirle. You know what, now we got to this point, why don't we just say, who's the author of our Mishnah, the Tanakhama? Just say, it's Rabbi Yehuda's Rabbi, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. Faha detani Yehuda braid the Rishim and Pazi, Rabbi Meirhi. And in the position that says that even lechatchila a cheresh can make the bracha on truma, that's Rabbi Meir who says that you don't have to hear that what you say. But the point being is, the Gemara kind of just backed itself into a corner here, because we just revealed that there's a position out there, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, who definitively takes the middle road and says that essentially a cheresh could be motzi someone b'dieved post facto. Why can't Rav Elazar ben Azariah be the Tana of our Mishnah? So it's not all clear that Rav Yossi needs to be the Tana of our Mishnah. Maybe it actually is Rav Yehuda, just in the name of his Rebbe, Rav Elazar ben Azariah, who says that b'dieved, if you hear, that's okay. All right, that's the end of the Gemara section. I want to bring in something maybe a little less technical, something really fundamental. I mean, obviously, everything's Torah, everything's beautiful, everything's important. But if you take a look, we're not going to read the whole thing inside. The hour is getting late. But if you take a look at Tosfos, okay? So you look at the right side of your Gemara, that's Tosfos over there. Good to be acquainted. Rashi on the left, Tosfos on the right, going back to 19b. Go back to your Testament base. There's a nice long Tosfos there. But there's a general rule, you know, like the longer ones are generally the easier ones, the shorter ones, because they're more terse, are the more difficult ones. So I'll just summarize what Tosfos' question is. Tosfos has the following question. We see that someone who is obligated on one level. Okay, sorry, let me take a step back. Why can't a non-Jew be motzi me in the midst of Megillah? Because a non-Jew is not obligated in the mitzvah of Megillah. So a non-Jew can't be motzi because he's not commanded in that mitzvah. All right, so that's pretty obvious. Why can't a child be motzi someone in Megillah? After all, a child should be able to be motzi somebody in Megillah, even lechatchila, because the child is chayv in mitzvos midrabbanan on a rabbinical level. By the way, even this question is a whole separate sugya. When the mitzvah of chinuch, the mitzvah of, you know, children doing mitzvahs before their bar mitzvah or bas mitzvah, most assume that's an obligation incumbent upon the father / the parents to teach their kids how to keep mitzvahs. But kids are not obligated until they become b'nei mitzvah. But Tosfos assumes that kids themselves actually have a rabbinical level commandment to keep the mitzvahs. And then when they become b'nei mitzvah, then it becomes biblical. Then it becomes d'oraisa. So the question is, children only obligate mitzvahs midrabbanan. Mikra Megillah is a dirabbanan level mitzvah. So why can't a child be motzi adults in Megillah, because everyone's obligated only on a dirabbanan? Good question. Yeah.
Maybe respect for the congregation.
Oh, interesting. Toby brings up an important point of which we actually will get to. This will be a mission, I believe, in the fourth parak of Kavod HaTzibur.
Right.
Right, exactly. So that's why they're actually a child, even if he's bar mitzvah, but he hasn't really grown facial hair yet. He still looks like a little kid. So you're not supposed to put him up as chasen. And his discussion, Rishon, does it mean never put him up, or does it mean, you know, maybe he shouldn't be the official cantor of the congregation? We did this a while back, talking about Tirchei Tzibura. But that's an interesting, I would call, external consideration. But Tosis tells us something very interesting. Well, we got to do a little bit of arithmetic over here. How many derabbanans are we dealing with? So take a look, actually. If you look at Tosis v'yesh lomar, in the middle, this is where the answer is. We're talking about a kid who's reached a stage of chinuch. V'afilu hachi pasu rabbanan mishun demegillah leka chiyuva afil begedolim elam midrabbanan. So adults are chayiv to hear Megillah on a rabbinical level. A katan emuchleiv el midrabbanan afil b'shar mitzvos. Whereas a child is only obligated in general on a derabbanan level, meaning I start at a doraisa level. I start biblically obligated in general. A child's default is he's only obligated on a rabbinical level. The only derabbanan I have is not that I inherently my mitzvah is derabbanan. Inherently, every mitzvah I keep is biblically obligated. It just the only derabbanan vis-a-vis me as an adult listening to this kid is that mikra megillah is midrabbanan. Sharei b'shar mitzvah chayv deraisa. So therefore, below asi trei derabbanan umapik chad derabbanan. You can't have two derabbanans. Two steps removed, kambi motzi, only one derabbanan. Adults only have one derabbanan, the mitzvah mikra megillah. The child has two strikes against him. One is he's a child. The second is the mitzvah mikra megillah. So he's a double derabbanan. You know, you see this kind of like when we talk about on Shabbos, the shvus. It's not completely analogous, but many times we have a double derabbanan, it's two steps removed. Asking a guy to do something for you is rabbinically forbidden, and then electricity we treat as rabbinically forbidden. So many times when many of the leniencies on Shabbos using a guy is that's called a shvus de shvus, a double derabbanan. I can ask the guy to turn on the air conditioning because it's a shvus de shvus, and there's some sort of general tzorech that it's generally very hot. So right. So that's a double derabbanan. The child is on a lower level than the adult. It's true. They're both obligated on a rabbinical level, but he's like two steps removed. Mikra Megillah, and he's a child. He has two strikes against him. So he can't be most of the adult as well. So that's Tosfos. Does that make sense? Double Durabanan? Yeah? So I want to briefly bring in the Turi Evan. The Turi Evan has, I've never actually finally purchased a hard copy of it. I've been quoting it actually extensively throughout our journeys in Megillah, but I never actually finally bought myself a hard copy. I was in your neck of the woods, Toby, the Five Towns, and I went into Z Berman. I'm like, you know what? Today's the day because I wanted to just see this inside. And what he asks is the following question: you guys ever hear of a constant cold Kol Yisrael Ravim Zebazeh? Mm-hmm. Right. So many times Kol Yisrael Ravim Zebazeh. You know, generally the rabbi, someone like myself, I get up there for a sermon and I start saying, you know, Kumbaya, my Lord, and like say, Holy Saul, Raven Zebaza, we are all in it together. Every Jew is an Arav, is a guarantor for the other. And it's generally this very mushy, inspirational idea. Happens to be actually, we learned it from Sefer Yehoshua when one guy sinned and then no one else stopped him and then everyone had to perish because of him. So it's actually not such a feel good idea. But halachically, what does Kol Yisrael Ravim Zebazeh mean? What Kol Yisrael Ravim Zebazeh teaches me is that, let's say we talked about this in the past. Let's say I make Kiddush already. So you may have not heard Kiddush. So if you, for whatever reason, you don't know Kiddush, there's no bencher, and you need someone to make Kiddush for you, and I know it, even though I make Kiddush already, I make it again. Why? I thought I have to share an obligation. I have to be chayv in order to be motzi someone else. What does Kol Yisrael Ravim Zebazeh teach me? That so long as another Jew has not fulfilled their mitzvah yet, to a certain degree, I'm still obligated in that mitzvah. It is a nice, beautiful idea at the end of the day. I don't want to detract from that as well. So the question over here to Ravim asks is, the child should still have some sort of chiyuv maybe because of Kol Yisrael Ravim Zebazeh. To which the answer is, he's not, actually children are not considered, they're not included in that principle. and possibly women also. There's a debate if women are included in Chloe Sorum Sabazet, which it kind of reminds me, sometimes you go again to your neck of the woods or for Rockaway. So you see like these ads in the Jewish newspapers that talk about Achdus and everyone coming together. And it just shows like a bunch of men, you know? So like Achdus, but like only men, not the rest of the Jewish people, you know? Like women don't have to be included in the Achdus. So that's actually Hagufa. That's actually a machlokis in Kol Yisrael Arim Zebzeh, if women are fundamentally included in there or not. So I guess we take the unorthodox position on this one. So his point is, children are not included in Kol Yisrael Zebzeh. But wait a minute. But he still gives another answer to Tosos. Tosos' answer to why a child can't be motzi an adult if he did not read yet is because the child has a double derabanan. The Turiyam says, I don't care about one Durabanan, two Durabanas. You're both Durabanan level. A child fundamentally should be able to be motzi an adult. He really should be able to. Fundamentally, a child can actually be motzi an adult in Megillah. You know, your 8-year-old, grandkid or child, they can get up there in a good shalom, and they can, it's not a policy, but fundamentally, they should be able to do that. Came along the Rabbanan, though. The Rabbanan were concerned. You know, when someone leans Megillah on Purim, many times you lean more than once. You lean at the 8:30, and you lean at the 9:30. You know, you want to, if you've practiced all your life for this, you want to lean more than once. You want to get the most out of that. So what's the issue? Once the child leans once, he can't lean again for other people. You know, it's like Nat Sandberg.
That's the same as an adult.
Oh, no. Because an adult, so Nat Sandberg, let's say he leans at the 6:30 chakras, right? And then he leans again at 11 a.m., at 12 p.m., at 1 p.m. The rest of the times, the reason he could be motzi other people is because of Kol Yisrael Zebzeh. Because so long as he's listening here in Megillah, he can still be motzi them. A child, though, once he fulfills his obligation, he doesn't have Kol Yisrael Zebzeh. He's not included in that. So what were the Rabbanon concern? Yeah, you know what? A child really could be motzi an adult. But what's the concern the Rabbanan had? That if he's going to lean once, he's going to lean a second time. That second time, he doesn't have a chiyuv. And therefore, since he doesn't have a chiyuv, he can't be motzi others. So Rabbanan made a safeguard. They made a gezeira that children should not lean at all, up to they might come to lean a second time, which is very plausible. And then they wouldn't be motzi anyone then. So actually, the Turi Evan disagrees with Tosos. Tosos says children fundamentally cannot be motzi adults. Turi Evan says children can actually be motzi adults in Megillah, but we're afraid that if they do it once, they'll reasonably want to lean more than once over the course of Yom Tov. And then because they're not chayiv, they don't have Kol Yisrael Zebzeh to make them chayiv again, so then people won't be yotzi from them. So better they don't lean at all than they lean and then cause other people to stumble. So very interesting approach from the Turi Evan.
But I mean, if children are exempt from that, then are they exempt? I mean, are they exempt from like the mitzvah of being kind to other people or helping somebody that you see is having a difficulty walking or something like that? I mean,
midrabbanan, they would be obligated on a rabbinical level. But by the way, this whole premise.
No, but I'm saying, why would they be? I mean, if it's not a raven.
So Kol Yisrael Zebzeh says once you fulfill your chiyuv, you become chayiv, kind of like, or you're still somewhat chayiv because you have to help someone else out. Right. So, but they'd still be chayiv in like gemilas chasadim. That's a separate thing. Kol Yisrael Zebzeh is just like it's a halachic category to make you chayiv to do a mitzvah a second time. But I should just note again, the whole notion of children being chayiv midrabbanan to be rabbinically obligated to do any mitzvahs is a controversial premise that Tosfos is adopting. The mainstream opinion on the sugya, my understanding from a number of years ago, it's been a while, is that children actually are not obligated in squat. They don't have any responsibilities. It's the parents who have the chiyuv to ensure that their children do mitzvos. So when little Johnny, makes a shahakal before eating his lollipop, he's not doing a mitzvah, but his parents are fulfilling a mitzvah by ensuring that little Johnny makes the bracha. So if little Johnny wants to help out his parents, he'll comply with them.
I never realized how limited Kol Yisrael Arevim was.
By the way, that's a lot of mitzvahs. One of my favorite examples, Vahavta Reicha Kamocha, love your neighbor as yourself. You know, you see all those rallies, But you look, Re'acha is actually exclusive. It's only referring to Jews who fundamentally sign on to the Torah. So that's much more limiting than people would have you believe. There's actually a lot of limitations. We're a pretty particularistic, exclusive religion, but that's for another time. All right, Shkayach, everyone. And not to worry, as Mincha gets earlier, our Shir gets earlier. I think this will keep the 40 minutes after Mincha through the first 2 weeks of October. And at that point, Mincha becomes so early that we'll just revert back to like a set time, either 7:30 or 8 o'clock. We'll decide as a group. All right.
Rabbi.
So I'll see you at 7:50.
Rabbi?
Yes.
I don't know why, but I got emails from two out of the 30 people that you sent emails to about the delay.
I think they accidentally replied all.
Huh?
I think they accidentally
replied all. Oh, that's what, but I never got one from you.
Oh, that's very odd. I'll check to make sure you're on the list, but I'm glad you made it.
Well, I was on the list. I called Marina and she told me I was.
Oh, very odd.
So I didn't understand what was going on.
All right. Well, let's be in touch directly. Maybe we could figure out a way to resolve that.
Thank you.
All right. Take care, everyone. Have a wonderful night.
Good night. Good job.
Shabbos.